Welcome to the X-Men TAS podcast. My name is Willie.
And I'm Sonia.
And Sonia, we've reached the end of season one with the final decision. It's been a long, strange journey through the first season of the X-Men, the animated series television show.
Well, not that long. How many episodes was this? 12?
You're right. No, I think this is only the 13th episode.
Oh, 13, yeah.
I think the next few seasons are going to be a little longer, so you're really going to have to buckle in. But yeah, you're right. We've blown through this first season pretty quickly already. And
yeah, a lot's happened.
Yep.
And, you know, they really tied things up in this episode in a nice way. It's a good end cap episode.
They reference a lot of previous episodes we've seen. It's it's the greatest thing about season one. It's pretty much a one big continuous story.
Right.
There's very few one-off moments.
Right. But then they also leave us with a little cliffhanger for the next season to come.
Well, so. It wouldn't be Marvel if they didn't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
It's really their trademark.
Yeah, we'll get to that, though.
Yep.
This is a great episode. It's one of my favorites ever. You know, it's kind of cinematic, this episode, especially in light of all the things leading up to it.
Mm.
It's very action-packed. Stakes are really high.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a superstar guest cameo from our old friend Magneto.
Yeah.
He's back in action here, too.
In a surprising role.
Yeah,
he's playing.
He puts down his black hat and puts on a white one.
Yeah. Well, let's start from the beginning before we...
All right. So from where we last left off, the X-Men had foiled Mystique and Apocalypse's plan to murder Senator Kelly. And in doing so, they sent our friend Bishop back to the future. And when we saw at the end of that episode, when Bishop goes to the future, things are still wrong, and we don't know why.
Right.
Even though the
wrong day, in a different way.
Right. Yes. And we don't know. We thought the day was saved, but apparently it isn't. But it turns out Magneto has kidnapped Senator Kelly. Now, what's confusing about this, watching this with adult eyes, is Magneto. He takes Senator Kelly to some like abandoned sunken ship.
Mm.
Barge or something, like the ruins of a ship on a shore. And he explains to Senator Kelly, he's like, I flew to Washington to see your assassination. I thought it would bring in a new age of mutant domination.
Mm-hmm.
But how did Magneto know Senator Kelly was going to be assassinated?
Yeah, and he was in exactly the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
They show him hovering outside the window where the assassination was supposed to take place.
Yeah, Magneto. Somebody tipped Magneto off. I mean, it had to either have been Apocalypse or Mystique. Or I guess it could have been the Blob, Pyro, or Avalanche. They were all in on this scheme, too.
And extremely irresponsible.
Right. And a lot of those guys, you know, would otherwise maybe be in Magneto's Brotherhood of Evil Mutants.
Right.
So maybe they just gave him a call. They're like, hey, Magneto, guess what? We're going to kill Senator Kelly in Washington. Come check it out.
Right.
And he's like, great, I'll be there.
Right.
But that was foiled, so Magneto takes it upon himself. He, like we said, he kidnaps Senator Kelly.
It's weird to me, though, that he doesn't just, like, try to kill him right on the spot there, you know? Like, he's witnessing the whole thing go down, and, he seems like a really impulsive guy.
Who, Magneto?
Yeah, and I'm surprised that he wouldn't just fly in through the window and,
I feel it's the way Magneto processes his rage. It's very, he needs to, like, really savor every last drop. So that's why he flies Senator Kelly to some, you know, offshore sunken barge, who knows where.
Okay.
And poor Senator Kelly's really being flown around and in unconventional ways, like, thousands of miles in this episode.
Right, who knows how he got him there, but
well,
whatever.
They flew him in a bubble.
Right, but,
right.
Okay.
In a magnetic bubble. But, and I just want to talk about Senator Kelly real quick. You know, he's been sort of the political villain of season one.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks like a cross between George H.W. Bush and, like, a more fit Ted Kennedy. I just wanted to mention that. I just like the way that they created a fictional politician, and they just kind of, like, You could see the reference points for real life, kind of like early famous politicians from the early 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
I just find that interesting about Senator Kelly. He's a good amalgam. Anyway, just as Magneto, you know, sees Senator Kelly, says, "I'm going to kill you," gives him a long-winded speech about how mutants are going to rise and dominate while the humans are still divided. But it's at that point the Sentinels discover Senator Kelly and they rescue him.
Right.
And Magneto's like, are you crazy? You're a robot. I'm Magneto. I can easily kill you. And they're like, no, we're made of plastics. And but as Magneto points out, this whole ship is made of metal, so he just flings things at them. But he's caught off guard, and the Sentinels really, you know, almost kill Magneto anyway.
Yeah, I mean, he gets into big trouble with them, but, like, starting in this scene...
It's a pretty violent fight.
Yeah, but starting in this scene, and then it continues later on in other scenes, you see a lot of electricity sparking around the Sentinels.
Uh-huh.
And if they're really made of plastic, then they wouldn't conduct electricity, so... I have a little bit of a problem with this. Like, there would need to be wires or something
maybe
on the inside.
Maybe it's just, like, the few Sentinels that attacked Magneto that were the plastic ones, and the rest of the ones were metal, traditional metal ones. I mean, I don't know the physics of conducting electricity in that way, but...
I'm not buying it. That's all
I'm
saying.
Yeah, so somebody write to us and let us know if this is possible, if there could be plastic Sentinels that conduct electricity. Anyway... But the Sentinels really mess Magneto up. They leave him for dead, and then they fly Senator Kelly off. Really, you see a shot of him, like, he's being held in a Sentinel's hand.
Yeah, like they just, like, pick him up
like
a
doll.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, wow, like, how far did they fly him now? It's like, what, like we said before, like, what horrible flying he's had to endure this day. Can you imagine being flown by a massive robot, like, thousands of miles in its large metallic, or in this case, plastic hand? Like, that cannot be. I'd be throwing up the whole time.
Well,
it goes up and down.
It must have been, like, a very long journey, and you just kind of imagine, like, the first few seconds or minutes, he's, like, flailing around and screaming and stuff. But after a while, you got to settle into a rhythm.
Or he just passes out. The extreme vertigo of it.
Just calm yourself down. Can't take all that stress.
Yeah, the inertia, the vertigo, and the G-force. That can't be good. So poor Senator Kelly, but also poor Magneto. And, you know, the X-Men know Magneto had captured Senator Kelly, so they track Magneto down. They discover this now an even more destroyed ship, and they're hunting for Magneto. They don't know what they're going to expect. There's a little tension. There's a cool shot of Wolverine backflipping into a reflective moonlight puddle. I really love that shot. It's really nice animation.
Mm-hmm.
And they find Magneto, and he's underneath a big piece of metal. You know, how ironic that he's being crushed to death by metal. But anyway, they rescue him, and he's alive, but his whole torso is covered in blood.
Yeah. His costume is really scraped away, so you just see his six-pack.
Yeah, he's really ripped.
But, like, but he's all, like, bloody and, like...
It's like, I was surprised to just see all that in a children's show, to see him just dripping with blood.
They're telling it like it is.
This is why this episode's awesome, because...
Because it's gory.
Yeah, they're not holding back. I mean, because this show is really good. And the closer they get to adult content, it really, like, the better it is, because it shows the potential of the show. It's not just a show for children.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, a really good, straightforward look at the X-Men.
Mm.
And, like I said, like, the closer they get to adult situations and themes, with maybe some of the romances with the characters, it's just great stuff. And I remember as a kid loving it, because this is what I think so many modern-day entertainers of children in the field of children entertainment do not understand. Kids want adult content. They don't want to see kids being heroes and doing kid things in a kid-friendly environment. They want to imagine themselves as grown-ups,
right,
faced with dangerous adult
situations. Well, I mean, maybe sometimes they want to see kids.
Okay,
but
maybe
definitely
sometimes.
Definitely, like... Yeah,
but you don't have to patronize to them. You know what I mean? You can have a cartoon for kids that features adults doing adult things.
Yeah, right.
And kids, like, go crazy for it. I mean, this show's an example. The Batman show from the same period is an example too.
Right.
I mean, and it just feels like, and this might be wrong, but it just feels like a lot of modern entertainment aimed at children is just so much more sanitized.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so depressing because it's just lame.
Right, because it's trying to, like, reflect kids' lives back to them, so it's more relatable.
And just, like, it's,
but,
you know...
But, like, the truth is, when you're a kid, like, you have no idea about the world and what grown-up life is like.
Yeah.
But you know that you're going to have to do that one day.
Yeah.
So, I think a lot of kids anyway kind of get on a mission of like learning as much about the adult world as they can.
Yeah, it's and, like to me, it's like the Indiana Jones thing. You watch Indiana Jones as a kid, and you're like, "Fuck yes, I want to be Indiana Jones."
Right. Well, you, also because you grew up thinking adult. Like I could be a policeman or a unicorn. Like Indiana Jones isn't that far out of the question at that point in your mind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right. It seems like a really cool career choice. You could be an archaeologist, and this is what archaeologists do. This is what adult archaeologists do. They have a bullwhip, a really cool hat, and they get into adventures where they tangle with Nazis.
Uh huh. So this is what adult mutants do.
Yeah. I mean, and,
when I grow up.
Right.
I can fight a sentinel.
I just wonder if, like, there's just too much heat on animators and creators these days. Like, they just know parents are so much more involved in kids' lives, and they're, like, maybe more likely to be watching the cartoons with their kids, which I don't really think is the case. I think parents don't necessarily have time for that. But I remember as a kid, my parents weren't watching X-Men with me.
No,
I mean,
never.
Maybe some parents out there with their kids in the early 90s
not
were.
Not because they objected to it, just because they were not interested
And they just thought it was stupid.
And it was just like, you know, you're a kid, you gotta get, like, a little bit of autonomy and
kids
be able to do some stuff independently, but
yeah, definitely.
Anyway, we're speaking as a childless couple, so what do we know? But
well, I mean, we know couples with children.
That's true.
we have nephews and things, and I have shown them this show, and they enjoyed it. But they're only four, so they don't really get it yet. Anyway, they can tell it's awesome. That's what's like so amazing. I showed them a random episode once, my 4-year-old nephew, and he just understood intuitively, like, this is amazing. And he like couldn't keep his eyeballs off it. He didn't even blink the 20 minutes it was on. And he had no idea what was going on. But he could just tell, like, I love the X-Men. I love superheroes. I love what's happening on the screen right here. I can tell this is, like, for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't have to explain him anything. I was just like, oh, that's Wolverine, you know, like.
Right.
Yeah. All right, anyway. So, you know, the Sentinels fly Senator Kelly to their secret Sentinel base. It looks like Trask, who invented the Sentinels, this sort of, you know, white-haired, mustachioed scientist guy, he's back. He recreated Master Mold, who was destroyed. It was seemingly destroyed in the Slave Island episode by Cable.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he was destroyed, but Trask built the second one, or he just saved him or salvaged him or something. Anyway, Master Mold's back up and running, and he's the large, super-sized Sentinel that, like, bakes other Sentinels in his stomach.
Right.
As an assembly line.
Easy Bake Oven Sentinel.
Yeah, and it's at this moment...
Edition.
Yeah, right. It's at this moment that Master Mold really takes control of the situation. He just informs Trask. Well, Trask is like, oh, Sentinel, take Senator Kelly back to his campaign headquarters in Washington. And I'm sure Senator Kelly was thinking, like, oh boy, I have to go flying with this thing. Can't you just, like, get me an Uber or something? Or book, like, a helicopter? But
it's 1992. There's no Uber.
Right, there's no Uber back then, yeah. But the Sentinel's like, no. And Trask is like, Master Mold, this Sentinel disobeyed me. He's defective. And Master Mold's like, no, he's not defective. I'm giving the orders now. So, and these are my orders. I want you to capture, we're going to capture every world leader and replace their brains with computers. And he says something like, it'll be a vast improvement. And Trask is rightfully horrified in this moment. He's like, oh my God, what have I done?
Yeah.
And,
But, it, like, the logic behind it is sound from the point of view of
Master Mold?
Of Master Mold, yeah.
Explain. I know you have, like, an inherent robot bias.
Yes,
you really sympathize with robots whenever we watch them in various mediums.
They have no emotions of their own. You have to project some onto them. Anyways, no, because he says something about, like, well...
You just like their cold logic.
Well, that's the thing, is that, like, the logic here, like, kind of works out in, like, a really demented way, because he says, like, well, mutants are humans.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He says, like,
he
mutants are human
himself.
Beings, and, like...
Therefore, they must be protected from themselves.
Humans don't need protection from mutants. If humans need protection from mutants, that means humans need protection from themselves.
Yeah, Master Mold really cut to the heart of the issue. He's like, so you guys are human beings, and some of you human beings give birth to mutants. Well, the problem is the human beings. You gotta get rid of them, human beings. And that, you know, it's funny. It's kind of ridiculous, but there's, like, an echo of that in the comic books, the original comics. The way the X-Men defeat the Sentinels, I think, in their first run.
Mm.
Cyclops, I think it's Master Mold, too, in the comics. Cyclops gets into an argument with him, and he's like... it's the same argument. That's why in the comics it's the same. He's like, yeah, well, we're going after all mutants and humans because humans are the source of mutants. And Cyclops is like, yeah, but you know, all life comes from the sun, and there wouldn't be any humans if there wasn't a sun. So in the comics, Cyclops convinces the Sentinels to attack the sun, and they all fly into outer space, and they just fly into the sun and die.
That's great.
Yeah, that's like a really like hilarious checkmate.
Really out-logicked those logic machines.
Right. Luckily, I guess for ours, it would have been funny to see that in this episode, but it's better that, you know, what does ensue is that the X-Men get into a big fight with the Sentinels here, which is way more entertaining than them just flying into the sun.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, so the X-Men are, like, a bit lost. Magneto, they rescue Magneto. He's in recovery at the X-Mansion. They don't know what to do. They need to, like, figure out where the Sentinels are. So it's at this point, they determine that Gambit has the best memories from Slave Island because he met all the people that created the Sentinels. So Professor X, again, asks Gambit to waive his psychic rights and say, can I read your mind? And Gambit, too, is uneasy about this. He's like, just don't go back too far, okay?
Yeah.
And so they make Gambit put on the Cerebro helmet. Professor X, interestingly, doesn't have to wear the Cerebro helmet when he's doing this. He just shoots his yellow...
mind beams at
right,
him.
Right, his yellow mind beam at him. And we see on the TV screen some cool, like Easter eggs. We see Ghost Rider, mm-hmm. who's sort of a famous character from the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he's in Gambit's past. There must have been something in the comics where, like, Gambit and Ghost Rider were connected. Mm. Maybe not even. Maybe it was just, like, some random image. And then we also see, I forget her name. I think her name is, like, Belladonna or something. I could be wrong about that. But she's in, coming up in season two, it's, like, Gambit's old girlfriend, mm. who is part of the Thieves and Assassins Guild. So we get, it's, like, a preview for, like, a future episode there as well, which is cool. He also has an image of, like, Rogue winking at him.
Right.
So anyway, we discuss Gambit focuses, and we meet our other old friend, Gyrick. I think his first name's Henry. Henry Gyrick.
I think so, yeah.
Right. And so he's in Washington, D.C. The X-Men go to D.C. again to track him down. He's driving in a limo. Cyclops asks Storm to stop his limo. And another, I only bring it up because Storm makes it snow to, like, make the car drive off the road. Mm-hmm. But in order to make it snow, she, like, shoots lightning into the sky.
Yeah. Awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's a cool, like, animation. But do you think, like, that's part of her power? That's how she, like, messes with the clouds by shooting?
I'm trying to think if she always does that. I don't think she always does. I think sometimes she just kind of raises her arms up and you see, mm-hmm. like, some wind swirling
right,
and then the clouds gather.
But a lot of times when she's using her powers, there's a lot of, like, extraneous lightning going on anyway.
Yeah.
It's kind of dangerous to be around
and
her.
Proclamations.
Right, yeah.
Various
yeah.
kinds.
She's doing her, like, enchantments or
yeah,
whatever.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, it's almost like magic spells.
Yeah.
So, you know, so they track Gyrick. He runs to the Washington Monument where Wolverine's waiting for him, sitting in Lincoln's lap. And it's just like, again, where is the DC police? This is a famous monument. There has to be guards somewhere. You can't just sit on Abraham Lincoln's lap in Washington, D.C., especially in a brightly colored yellow spandex outfit.
Right. Well, it started to snow. The guards went home. Let's say that.
They're like, oh, snow day. Yeah. Yeah. So that's funny, too. And again, Wolverine tackles this guy, and he extends his claws very dramatically, as he's done all season, and he's, like, shaking, like, about to stab him with pure rage, and Cyclops has to tell him, Wolverine, don't hurt him. We have to talk to him.
Right.
But I wonder, is, like, are Cyclops and Wolverine bluffing, like, playing good cop, bad cop? Mm-hmm. Or is Wolverine legitimately, like, he could just murder anyone
at any
time? I
don't think he would murder him. Because he knows what they're on a mission for. He knows, like, that they need this guy.
Yeah, but there's this implication throughout the whole season that Wolverine can't be trusted because of his animal rages.
Right, because they think he's, like, a loose cannon or something.
Again,
so there's
connecting
always, like,
themes here.
Right, like, somebody's always telling him, like, Wolverine, don't do that, or whatever.
Right,
you know?
And he always has to be stopped. Like, someone has to put a hand on his arm. He's always shaking because he wants to stab somebody
yeah,
so badly.
But, like, all of those attempts are really just little, like, reminders, you know?
Right.
Like, it's not like he's forcibly removed from these situations most of the time. So, I don't think he was really going to murder anybody.
Yeah, probably not. But yeah. Still, it's interesting to think about.
Yeah.
It's like how much of a like live wire is Wolverine,
yeah,
or a short fuse. And then Gyrek tells him that, you know, it's too late because he realizes too that I guess he gets a phone call from Trask where Trask says, like, Master Mold's going to replace every world's leader's brain with a computer. So Gyrek knows, like, this is bad news, too.
Yeah.
So he has no problem cooperating with the X-Men, even though he hates mutants. But he warns them, like, listen, Master Mold's created thousands of Sentinels. Thousands.
Mm.
It's like, we don't know how many thousands exactly, but, like, you know, that's not good odds for the X-Men. There's only, like, six of them.
Right. But they don't care. Away they go looking for those thousands of
Sentinels.
Well,
no, not just quite yet. You forgot.
Oh.
The X-Men have a team meeting right before where Gambit is, like, fully against this.
Yeah.
He's like, this is suicide. And his argument's like, first of all, there's thousands of Sentinels, and we're going to risk our lives to save Senator Kelly, who hates mutants anyway.
Right.
Like, this is crazy. And Professor X is like, yeah, you're right. This is crazy. Maybe we shouldn't do it.
Uh-huh.
And Magneto also thinks it's suicide.
But the point isn't to save Senator Kelly. The point is that
that stops Sentinels.
Yeah.
Right, and exactly. All the world
they're
leaders.
Saving the whole world, basically.
Yeah.
Of course they're going to risk their lives for that.
Right, but Magneto's also like, he says something like, you've lost, your foolish dream is over. But and he's really like saying, like, you guys, this is pointless.
Yeah.
You know, like, the whole, like, case for mutant, like, you know, happiness or optimism is no more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's, like, a strong argument to be made. Master Mold's made thousands of Sentinels. These things are, like, completely, like, insane, like,
killing machines
that can think with artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And they're already capturing all the world leaders. We see them being captured.
Yeah.
There's, like, you know, there's, like one, like, Saudi world leader is captured in his limo and is being flown.
Right.
Like, so it looks pretty grim, you know.
Yeah,
this is, like, end times.
They're the X-Men, so they decide to go do it
anyway.
Yeah,
they do. They talk themselves into it. Cyclops is all about the mission. Wolverine, like, in a rare moment, sides with Cyclops. He's like, we're with you, Psych. And he tries to stop Jubilee from going, Wolverine, because she's too young.
Yeah.
And Jubilee starts crying and says, like, I'm an X-Man now. I'm
not a kid anymore, even though she's, like, whimpering.
And she's like, being an X-Man means everything to me. And Wolverine says, it means that's what it means to me, too. And he lets her go, which is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Again, bad.
Well, maybe he figured
bad foster,
you know,
parenting by the X-Men.
Everyone's going to die anyway, so.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. This is like an apocalyptic scenario.
Yeah, there's, they need,
like,
all the help they can get.
I guess. But, I mean, Jubilee, she's...
Yeah, I know.
It's just... That's kind of reckless. And then, speaking about reluctantly going, there's a great animation of Gambit reluctantly, like, getting out of his chair, you know, just forcing himself to go on this mission. He thinks this is totally nuts. And that's after Rogue, like, stared him really, like, evil eyes for not being brave enough.
Mm.
You know, he really got guilted into, like, a silent stare down by Rogue.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just, like, a great moment. I mean, this episode's filled with great dramatic acting and tension.
Mm.
And so the X-Men blast off to their mission to find the Sentinels. And we get, like, a great, like, moment for Magneto, where he gets two amazing lines of pure drama as the music's building up behind him. He says, you're all fools, heroic fools. And you could have faded out on that, but then he gets another line where he says, the brave are always the first to die.
Yeah.
Commercial. Right. As a kid, I was like, oh my god, this is nuts. And then the X-Men arrive at this, like, I don't know, it's like in the tropics somewhere. I don't think it's Genosha. I mean, maybe it is still, but it's somewhere, maybe in South America. They find the hidden Sentinel base, and their plan is basically, they split up. Storm, Rogue, and Jubilee are going to fight, like, above ground.
Mm-hmm.
With Professor X hovering around in the Blackbird,
right,
giving
which is
air
amazing.
Support.
Yeah, because he's, like, really in combat this time, which you don't see that often.
Oh, yeah. And he's like, I've got a jet.
Yeah, with lasers.
Yeah, he's got the Blackbird is outfitted with yellow laser beams. And then the other group, Jean Grey, Cyclops, Gambit, and Wolverine, go underground and to fight to get rescue Kelly and I guess Trask too, and to, you know, blow up Master Mold if they can. I guess they're really just down there to rescue Kelly, but I think this plan is dumb.
Yeah, I mean, he said
they're
thousands,
just literally, yeah, so. There's just, like, literally three guys at the top or four, and four guys underground, and that's all you guys got. I mean, like, maybe, like, you got a big jet there, can you just maybe, like, strafe it and, like, shoot, like, a huge payload at this base or something? Like, try to blow it up from afar?
I mean, they do, eventually.
Well, yeah, I mean, kind of, but not, like... It just seems like a crazy plan to me.
All right, well...
They're so outnumbered, you know? Yeah. These Sentinels are so dangerous. But anyway, the fight is awesome. It's super epic. It starts where we see the X-Men go down underground, and the Sentinels are all waiting for them, like hundreds in this underground mine to shoot them. All their hands are pointed up, but instead of the X-Men coming down in this cart, it's one of Gambit's playing cards. And I love this line as a kid, where the Sentinels are like, "Oh, what is that object?" And another one goes up and looks at it really close. He's like, "It appears to be the Ace of Spades." Mm-hmm. Boom. Take that, Sentinels. And then, so that's the opening gambit, shall we say, by the X-Men.
Huh.
And they all fly out to the surface. That's where they think the X-Men are, because they didn't know that Wolverine, Gambit, Cyclops, and Jean Grey are hiding in a little, like, ditch
tunnel
on the side.
Yeah.
And so they all fly out, and that's when Storm, Rogue, Jubilee, and Professor X have to start tangling with them. And
right.
they start off doing pretty good. Storm and Rogue are beating them up or destroying them. And
yeah,
Professor
it's a really
X
great battle
them.
To watch, actually, because it's all happening in the sky. So it's like the night sky, and like the Sentinels have the red laser beams they're shooting out all over the place.
Yeah, it's cool.
And like Storm and
it would be a great movie
Professor
scene.
X have like their yellow lightning and lasers. It's like, it would be a great movie
and
scene.
And Jubilee even kills a few of them, like partly by accident, you know, but she helps.
Yeah.
But very quickly, things start to go bad. You know, Professor X is shooting them with his Blackbird jet, but he very quickly gets shot down.
Yeah.
But he's saved by Magneto.
Right.
Who, you know...
Decided to tag along
after
all.
He felt guilty too, yeah.
Yeah.
So even though he's all bandaged up and injured. And he says, "Do you think I'd let you die alone, Xavier?" Which is kind of a weird thing. It's like, that's like a good character beat. Because it, you know, again, it hints at what we saw previously, that they were friends in the past.
Right, that they have this history together.
Right, and that they kind of, like, despite them being having different ideologies, they have this, like, almost brotherly connection.
Right.
And you know what I like most about Magneto in the show and in the movies is that, like, human side of him, where he really respects Xavier.
Yeah, totally.
Like,
because it makes him a much more relatable character, because mm-hmm. you see them as real people with, like, this long history of friendship.
Yeah.
And, like...
And they're so powerful and so iconic.
Right, but they're still human on the inside.
Yeah. I mean, it's like... I love the newer X-Men movies, First Class and Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
Like, where they try to build up the relationship between Magneto and Professor X, and mm-hmm. the actors are so great. James McAvoy and... Michael Fassbender. They're so good at it.
Yeah.
But it's like, I feel like the scripts, like, even still left it a little bit short in those films, because you don't really get the buildup of a relationship that you'd have liked to see. It's all, like, done very quickly. Like, in the first movie, they're literally, like, they hang out with each other for, like, 2 weeks before they go off on their final mission in Cuba.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, okay, fine, that's the beginning. But then the next movie, it's like 10 years later... And they hate each other at this point, but when they reunite, they act like they're, like, these old friends.
Yeah, it's like, but you didn't, like, see that happen.
Yeah, and, like, if you follow the logics of the movies, they only knew each other for a couple of weeks, and it's kind of like, you guys aren't old friends.
All right, we digress. In the cartoon...
And it betrays what happens in the original X-Men trilogy, where it's, like, Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, and it seemed like they had this long, interesting history, too. So, whatever. My point is, it's, like, Professor X and Magneto's relationship is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so Magneto's helping. But then underground, Gambit and Wolverine and Jean Grey and Cyclops split up into two teams again. I love Gambit and Wolverine being teamed up here. They discover a mine with a million Sentinels. It's completely pitch black dark, and you see like 100 eyes light up with that like clinking on computer noise, and their eyes light up. And Wolverine and Gambit retreat at first, but... Wolverine's fooling Gambit. He pushes him out and locks this huge metal door behind him.
So conveniently placed there for this exact purpose.
It's a mine. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
But anyway, Wolverine is like, he wants to fight the Sentinels all by himself and protect Gambit to an extent.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me, really. I guess it, like, fits with Wolverine's personality.
Yeah. Well, Wolverine, but, this goes back to my original complaint in, the first two episodes. Wolverine is invincible.
Yeah.
He can take on 100 Sentinels at once. Morph did not need to sacrifice himself. And in this situation, it's almost like Wolverine's commenting on that. Because he's like, I don't want anyone, risking their lives to save me. I'll be fine. He's like, Gambit, you get out of here kind of thing. And it's like a really great scene when Wolverine's all by himself. It's completely pitch black dark, and it only lights up when they shoot their laser
beams
at
him. That's another one. It's like cinematic already.
Oh,
like,
it's so good.
I want to say it would be a great movie scene, but it's already a great scene in this show.
And this is why this show is so revolutionary, and people really need to get into it again if they have. Because, nothing had been done on a Marvel property up to this point like this show. This was a cinematic show. I mean, it just, laid the groundwork for all Marvel movies going forward.
Mm-hmm.
You had these scenarios. It was, great action and, all the drama you can have. And, a scene like this is a perfect example of Wolverine hopping around in the dark, fighting these massive, robots.
He's, perfectly dodging each of, the laser beams.
He's doing
beams.
All his best athletics.
Right. It's, acrobatic
backflipping and stuff.
Gymnastics and stuff.
And it's really hard for him,
and
too.
And then he's, using his claws and,
cutting
chopping
their legs
them
off.
Down.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I mean, just imagine that on a big screen, in real life. That would have been so... I mean, that's, another disappointing thing about the movies. They never really got the Sentinels, right, they came close in the Days of Future Past movie,
mm-hmm.
but even by the time Wolverine's fighting the robot Sentinels, you're finally, you're Wolverine versus Sentinels. He's got his stupid bone claws, so he can't slash into them on the big screen like he's supposed to. That was a huge missed opportunity, in my opinion, as well.
Well, anyway, in the show, where we're up to, Gambit, hears all this commotion going on the inside, and he really wants to...
Well, yeah, he's not going to let
No,
Wolverine...
he's an X-Man, so he, throws a playing card and
he
opens up the door.
Yeah, blows
and
the door down.
Yeah.
And he actually really helps Wolverine, because Wolverine's kind of on his ass at this point.
Right.
And his, shirt's all ripped open and stuff.
Right. And not bloody like Magneto was, but,
He doesn't bleed as much, probably.
Well, who knows? Anyway, so Gambit, helps him out a whole bunch.
Gambit, really brought a lot of playing cards for this. There's one quick shot where Gambit's he's got his playing cards held up vertically in his hand, and they're all just
glowing and
it's you could do that with real playing cards if you just wanted to make a mess.
Yeah.
You press them down at their edges and they just all go flying out of your hand.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's cool when Gambit does it because they're so charged with kinetic energy that they fly out in a straight line of pure explosive force.
Yeah.
Which is really great. So they have a great scene together, and that's after hating each other the whole first season.
Right.
It's almost a bonding moment for them.
Right.
And then, so then Cyclops and Jean make their way to where Master Mold is. Master Mold is ranting still about humans need to be protected from themselves, and kind of reflecting on his life. Because Cyclops shoots him, and his optic blast does nothing. It's Master Mold. And Master Mold blasts Cyclops in a pretty violent blast,
mm-hmm.
but he's not dead.
Right.
And Master Mold's like, I do not kill because I do not fear.
Right.
And Trask just takes it upon himself. He has some kind of laser welding device. He aims it at a bunch of propane. And it turns out this entire mine is filled with propane canisters.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Hank Hill's worst nightmare, but a lot of propane goes up. It's a cool shot. Cyclops and Jean rescue Senator Kelly and Trask.
Right.
And they and here's a cool thing where Cyclops shows an alternate use for his power where he blasts tunnels in the bedrock of these underground caves.
Right, in places where there were none before, but they need an escape route, so he just makes one.
It's so cool. He's this laser mole. And he hooks up with Gambit and Wolverine, so they're all together. They're trying to escape. The whole underground mine's exploding, and it looks like Master Mold's destroyed. They all make it to the surface. Rogue's worried for a moment, but everyone's fine. And I shouldn't gloss over it. Cyclops breaks off from Jean because he's I'm not leaving Gambit and Wolverine behind.
Right.
I'm not leaving anyone behind, not this time. Again, referencing Morph's death.
Right.
So this, it's, just great the way they just connect all the episodes previously and all the themes of, Cyclops is, I can't risk,
losing another team member.
Yeah, it's, I'm going to risk my own life. This is what being a leader is all about.
Yeah.
So, Cyclops is, really comes off strong in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
He's not, he's learned a thing or two himself about, bravery and courage mm-hmm. in this season one. So, you know, the X-Men do make it. Everyone makes it safely to the surface somehow. But then we see there's this, like, huge mountain, and Master Mold volcanoes himself out of the mountain. He, like, shoots a laser beam into the sky and explodes from the mountaintop. And he's about to kill everybody because Master Mold's super – he's got super heavy-duty weapons. It's like, why did Trask give this Master Mold weapons in the first place?
But
like,
he, right, yeah.
Anyway, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, like, Master Mold just gave this speech about how he doesn't need to kill anyone because he's not afraid of anyone.
Well, yeah, but now he's like...
now the tables have turned.
Yeah, he realizes that he's miscalculated, that these X-Men are more dangerous than he thought.
Right. Meanwhile, Professor X has got the Blackbird all fixed
it's operational again somehow.
Full of TNT.
Right. It's, like, full of, like, TNT and gas, like, straight out of a Looney Tunes cartoon.
Yeah.
Like, right from, like, Wile E. Coyote's, like, vault.
Yeah, totally.
It's not subtle.
I mean, the whole this whole scene is a little bit out of, like, a Looney Tunes cartoon because he's, like, flying it straight into this volcano mountain.
It's hilarious.
But he's got this ejector seat that he uses at the last minute, and then he's, like, you know, it's successful.
Oh, well, first Master Mold blasts him, but Magneto again saves Professor X.
Right.
Like, he creates a magnetic shield, so that allows Professor X to do his kamikaze there, but Professor X isn't going to kill himself.
A kamikaze.
Well, yeah, I mean, kamikaze's the plane, not his life.
Ah, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So, and then there's, like, a funny moment where Professor X is parachuting down. He's like, Magneto, save me. Where is he?
And then, like, as if summoned, Magneto just shows up right away.
And they have some parting words where Magneto's like, even though I saved you, it's not – nothing's resolved between us.
Yeah.
And Master Mold explodes in, like, a satisfying, like, almost like a mushroom cloud nuclear explosion, which, you know, I guess I guess everyone's safe. It must not be a nuclear explosion. Because, you know, there's no fallout and the X-Men are fine on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that just about wraps it up. They've saved Senator Kelly. Everyone's safe. We see Senator Kelly at a press conference where now he's got a completely different, like, 180-degree agenda switch. He's, like, super progressive on mutant rights now.
Mm-hmm.
And he just spouts the X-Men philosophy where he's like, yeah, there's some mutants that are dangerous and we have to be careful about them, but there's some mutants who want to use their powers to help mankind. And, you know, that's my policy now. And he has a lot of support. And he does get elected president in the show.
Right.
So it's like America's, like, all on board about it. So the X-Men, like, really changed, like, the course of events.
Yeah.
For the better. So that was actually a big win for the X-Men. On the political side, they got a big ally.
Right. So, like, it makes you wonder about, like, the whole time experiment, you know.
Oh.
It's like, so, like,
now the future is going to be changed in another way.
Right, exactly. Because you would assume that the future that we saw with, like, Wolverine
and Bishop.
Right, and Wolverine's skeleton and Bishop, like, when Bishop first comes back, like, you could surmise that that's, like, a future timeline where Senator Kelly is killed by Master Mold.
Right, yeah.
You know
that,
I mean?
Well, that's what we're led to believe at the end of episode 12.
Right.
That Magneto kills Kelly, or that the Sentinels, like, succeeded in turning Kelly's brain into a computer or something, their evil plan.
Right, yeah. But now it seems like the X-Men have actually changed the course of history.
Right, but we don't fully know yet because we will see Bishop and that dystopian future again in season 2, spoilers.
Right, yeah.
And then another, like, happy note, Beast is freed from prison.
Yeah.
From cartoon jail.
Right.
Yeah, and he'll be a big player in season 2.
Good.
Yeah, because he's really great and he's, like, severely underutilized in season 1.
Yeah.
So it's good that Beast is freed by Senator Kelly.
Yeah.
Beast, like, says that, like, by paraphrasing Shakespeare, he implies that Kelly pulled strings to get him released from jail.
Right.
So Beast is free. He gets to rejoin the team.
Yeah. Off the back burner.
And then lastly, the episode ends with, like, it's a beautiful, like, spring day, much like it is here as we're recording this in May of 2017. And Cyclops and Jean are holding each other on the X-Men lawn, on the X-Mansion lawn, like, on a picnic, and Cyclops asks Jean to marry him.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she says yes, but she, you know, says, like, but what about our children? They'll be mutants, and they're going to face the same prejudices and challenges that we face, like, maybe even worse.
Mm.
And Jean, and Cyclops is like, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
And so it seems like a happy ending, but, however, they're being spied upon by Mr. Sinister. And that's like a big cliffhanger for season two that like we hinted at earlier. Mm-hmm. That they can't, things are never like left with a happy ending with the X-Men. It's an endless soap opera.
Right.
And
cliffhanger after cliffhanger.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not going to be like necessarily smooth sailing for Cyclops and Jean.
Yeah.
And you said something funny to me. It's like when they were talking in their picnic in their like casual clothes, like, why does Jean Grey call?
No, when he asks her to marry him,
oh, right, yeah.
He says, Jean, will you marry me? And yeah. She goes, oh, Cyclops. But, like, he's not even wearing his X-Men uniform. They're wearing, right. like, casual clothing.
Right.
And, like, he doesn't have his visor thing on. He has, like, regular sunglasses. I'm like, yeah. If this man is going to be your husband, wouldn't your first instinct be to call him Scott? Like, his right. actual name?
Well, my theory about that was that she loves Cyclops more than she loves Scott Summers. That's what attracts her. She's attracted to the man in the tight blue spandex, showing all his muscles and, like, taking charge. Uh-huh. Not, like, the wimp that is, like, a real nerd to Professor X. And
yeah, well.
So she's into Cyclops.
Who wouldn't be?
Yeah. I don't know. That's actually kind of cool, you know, call him Cyclops. It's like, that's his personality, too. I don't know.
All right.
That's who he is.
Yeah.
So it ends on that cliffhanger. And, you know, like I said, great first season. Really... You know, I've watched the show beginning to end many times, but but because we've just started this podcast, I purposely not watched ahead. I want to like be surprised mm-hmm. as we go through
it. As surprised as you can be,
right? As surprised as I can be, exactly. So watching it, you know, with fresh eyes. But so I can still say this pretty confidently that I think season one might be the best season.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be the most interesting season because they tread a lot of interesting ground going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And the future seasons are really good, too.
Yeah.
But this is, like, the most consistent. And, like, it really lays out the mission statement. The characters are really well written.
Mm-hmm.
All the dialogue
really
is
well
great.
Acted,
yeah.
Like,
there's just, like, a lot of great, like, settings and great storylines and just the way they subtly introduce all the like a lot of side characters and guest characters like Colossus and Archangel.
Yeah.
And just like the hints of things. It's just the perfect amount of everything. Like
yeah,
the right amount
really
of fairy dust.
The right chord.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean if it's not the best season, it's like right up there.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean we'll see going forward. Maybe my assessment will change if I'm like, oh man, why did I say that? Like season three, of course, or something, you know. But well, a great season one.
We'll see.
Yeah. Short and sweet, too. It's, like, real easy to blow through on a, you know, on, like,
a couple of rainy weekends.
Yeah, just, you know, if you've never watched the show and you're following along with us, you know, like, get into it. It's just, like, so good. Yeah, I mean, like, that's the other thing. It's just, to me, it's still really good. I'm 33 years old now. I watched the show when I was 8 years old. Like, it is not, it still holds up. Like, I'm entertained.
Yeah, it doesn't disappoint.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right. So, I mean, that's all we got for now. I'd like to say that in the coming weeks, before we jump into season two, which we'll do relatively soon, we might have some special episodes, bonus episodes planned. I'm not sure yet. It depends on a few things. We could have some interesting star power come to the show, or we might. If not, we might get like we might do something really fun and unique that we'll do at the end of our seasons. But I don't want to spoil too much. Just something to keep in tune for, to stay tuned for. And with that, I'll just say the normal housekeeping stuff. Please find us on Facebook, the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group. Just search us on Facebook. You'll find us. Join our group. Talk to us. We've already been talking to some lovely fans where we hint about like some of the future fun stuff we're talking about and get into funny. We had some funny conversations about Gambit's clothing in the comic books. and some other fun stuff. And also, you can find me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Also, a reminder to subscribe if you haven't already. Let your friends know if they love X-Men. You know, rate us 5 stars. Leave us a nice review. That really helps us get further exposure in the iTunes world. But you can also find us on any Android podcast app or Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts. And we just really want to thank everyone for following along with us in the first season here. It's been a lot of fun to do these episodes, and we hope to keep going.
Yep.
Do you have anything to add to the end of season one, my dear?
Adios.
All right. Adios, everybody. Until next time.
Until next time.